Welcome everybody to episode 4 of the Secret Diaries Chat, the Hypeable.com podcast, which talks about the latest episode of The Vampire Diaries and The Secret Circle. This week we're going to be talking about the episode Dangerous Liaisons. Am I saying that right? Liaisons?
We say liaisons in America, but I think it's liaisons in England, so you're good no matter what
I'm
you
good.
Say.
All right then. And Valentine, which is the Secret Circle episode. And we've got the complete set of hosts this week, which is fantastic. My name is Selena, and I am joined by
Laura Byrne Cristiano,
Jen,
Sonia Faria,
Sarah Malloy.
Okay, well done, everybody. That was
unrehearsed. And poor Jen is sick, so her voice is a little scratchy, but she's going to be here with us, and she's a trooper.
Yes. Yeah, we hope this podcast magically cures your throat. Don't know why it would. Okay, before we get into the Vampire Diaries discussion, let us just remind you about the ways in which you can contact us and leave your feedback for discussion on the show. You can email us at secretdiaries@hypeable.com, follow us on Twitter, Secret Diaries TV, and you can find us on hypeable.com, that's hypable.com, under the podcast section. And finally, if you want to skip ahead right now to the Secret Circle discussion, that begins at
approximately the 24-minute mark.
On to the first discussion of the week, talking about the 14th episode of The Vampire Diaries, third season, entitled Dangerous Liaisons. In this episode, the original family, alias the Michelsons, very clever, are doing what any normal family would do, obviously, after waking up from a 1,000-long-year enchanted sleep. They're hosting a ball, which is great, because it gives all our characters the chance to dress up in fancy, I was going to say costumes, I guess it's not what it is, fancy dress. Elena, Caroline, and Matt, interestingly enough, are all invited to attend. Elena gets invited by Esther, while Caroline and Matt are invited by Klaus and Rebecca, respectively, which is interesting in itself. The episode really was one for the shippers, as we saw many interesting romantic developments, and we will be discussing all of these in great detail, but to sum up, Elena and Stefan hatch a plan to let Elena see Esther without Damon knowing. Damon finds out and ends up sleeping with Rebecca. OMG. Rebecca, meanwhile, originally brought Matt to the ball to kill him, but ends up being surprised by how much she really likes him and lets him live. Klaus keeps striking out with Caroline, who is still absolutely Team Tyler. And Elijah once again proves how awesome he is, trying to form an alliance with Elena. There's a lot of ease in this episode, I just realized, trying to work out what Esther is doing. Esther, it turns out, was full of BS when she told Klaus that she would forgive him last week, as she is really hosting this ball so she can link all of her children together with a spell to kill them all at once. At the end of the episode, it looks like she succeeded, and now all it takes is for one original to be killed, and then they will all die once the spell is completed. And since Finn is already in on the plan, this shouldn't be very difficult. And that is the brief summary right here. I think we should get in and discuss some of the big plot developments in this episode. I figure we'll divide this discussion, talk about them couple by couple, and finish up then talking about Esther's secret master plan. So let's start with the big romance, I guess, the Stefan-Elena-Damon triangle. Things really came to a head this week, as Elena, for all intents and purposes, showed that no matter what Stefan's done, she's willing to take him back the minutes he lets his emotions in. And when Damon, in this week, told Elena that he loved her, of course, not only did she kind of blow him off in a pretty horrible way, but she practically pushed him back into his self-destructive habits and into the arms of Rebecca. So, what does everybody think of that?
Well, I think it's interesting that Damon chose to make out or hook up with Rebecca because they're both kind of vindictive at this point. And I think for Rebecca, it's her way of getting back at Elena for staking her. And for Damon, it's just he's angry and he acts out when he's angry. So that's his way of acting out to kind of rid himself of Elena for the moment.
Yeah, it was kind of inevitable in a way, wasn't it, that Rebecca and Damon were going to hook up at one point? Because they have
yeah,
been...
I think so.
They have been
I really think it was inevitable for them to hook up. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of figured Rebecca would, but I didn't think that Damon would so easily go back to his old ways. It was, like, literally, like, an instantaneous switch. It was, like, the start of the episode, he was, for all intents, this is a good boy, and then at the end, he was back to his bad boy ways. It was, like, a complete 160, and it was kind of a weird reason for him to do it, too, because it's not like Elena said, oh, no, I don't love you. She kind of did, like, this little slip, and she said, I didn't mean to say that, and he just didn't believe her, so I thought it was weird.
Well, I didn't, because she had Stefan take him out of the plane, so she's in, like, cahoots with Stefan, so I think that's also what pushed him over the edge, is he realized that she's never going to come around to wanting to be with him. I think between that and the whole I love you scene, he was kind of just done. He needed to prove to himself that he wasn't so sucked into Elena, so he went for Rebecca.
Do you think that he felt betrayed by Elena?
Yeah, absolutely. All he was trying to do was protect her, and she just pushed him right out of the plan and went back with Stefan to have help on the plan.
Well, kind of off that, Elena said in this episode that Stefan, when they were together, let her do what she wanted, while Damon is kind of more controlling. Do you think that's true?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely true. You can totally tell. But I don't think that it's necessarily, like, a bad kind of control. I don't know how to explain that. But he's not, like, being totally mean to her. Except for in this episode, he kind of grabbed her arm a little bit forcefully, which I was kind of like, hey, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, he's out to do it for her better good when she doesn't want to realize what kind of danger she's putting herself in. So it's almost better for her. But I can see when you're trying to have a relationship with someone, you do need to be able to trust them. So, like, protection-wise, Damon really is better for her, but relationship-wise, Stefan is better for her.
Okay. And I think when she was with Stefan, sorry, I'm sick too. I think that when she was with Stefan, and he would let her do whatever she wanted, you know, Damon was there to protect her, even if it made her angry. You know, a lot of times she would get really upset because he did something to protect her after Stefan had let her do whatever she wanted. You know what I'm saying? And so if she goes back with Stefan, he, you know, isn't there to protect her in the same way Damon is, and Damon's not around anymore to protect her. Like, I think that could become a big problem.
Okay, so do you think that this is kind of the start of the reversal of roles between Damon and Stefan? Do you think Damon's going to go back to being the bad one and Stefan's going to be the good one again?
Well, it's weird because Stefan isn't really going back to being a good guy because he won't admit his feelings to Elena. He's okay admitting it to Damon, but not to Elena. I don't remember exactly what he said, but didn't he say something like if he admitted to her about his feelings that it would make it worse for him, like the pain?
Yeah, if I let myself care, all I feel is pain, is what he said. I wrote that down, by the way.
Yeah, I knew I should have written that down, but Yeah, so he's worried about dealing with that emotions, which is what's kind of holding them up right now, because I think at this point, they're both ready to be back together. They obviously both miss each other, and they're kind of danced around it this whole episode, but at the end, he just doesn't want to deal with it again, because he's already gone through that before. And I think he's afraid to bring back his humanity, and then kind of have to go back into Ripper. He doesn't want to keep doing back and forth, you know what I mean? Like, it's too painful for him. And I think while Klaus is around, he's afraid that there's a chance that the Ripper will keep coming back.
I think it's interesting. It's not really unexpected, but it's interesting that Elena is so quick to want to go back to Stefan. You know, after everything he's done, it's like the minute he shows a bit of humanity, she's right there.
Well, she never really gave up on him, is the thing. I'm not really surprised that she was, like, so quick to take him back. That's what she wants. She never wanted him to leave. She never wanted to lose him, so I'm not surprised by that. I think it's a little bit foolish of her to jump between the two brothers like this.
Yeah, she should just go for Elijah and just call it a day.
Oh, my God, those moments.
I know. That would be a very good twist. I don't know why. Let's talk now about Klaus and Caroline, which was another interesting part of the episode. I swear to you, I thought he was going to start singing, I Can Show You the World. That's really what it felt like. It was the lines that they exchanged were so hilarious, like when they were by the horse and he was like, I fancy you, I enjoy you. And she was like, I'm spoken for. Very old fashioned.
Is it lame that I loved it though?
It was kind of odd. No, it's not lame. I know exactly what you mean. But I mean, it's interesting because while Caroline, I mean, she's definitely still in love with Tyler, but this development, I mean, it really seems like it's affecting Klaus. You know, it's going to be, he's definitely, I think, going to change now because of what she's told him. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think he's already changed to some extent. Do you know what I mean? Like, he hasn't tried to kill anybody recently.
Yeah. Yay!
He's nicer to everybody. He wasn't threatening anybody. So I think that there's something about Caroline that brings out the good in Klaus. If, you know, whatever little there is left, it kind of softens him and makes him a nicer person. And he does nice things for her, and it doesn't seem like he's doing them to get something out of it. He's doing it because he wants to do it. You know what I mean? He wants to make her happy.
Yeah, he really wants to show her the world. It's amazing.
He really does.
Even though Klaus, in general, has done a lot more bad than Tyler has, you know, Tyler has hurt Caroline a lot more than Klaus has. Even though sometimes it was Klaus's fault, you know, more directly. You know, Tyler bit her. He attacked her dad and essentially kind of was the reason he died, sort of. And so, you know, Tyler's a lot worse for her if you think of it like that. So hopefully she'll transition to Klaus.
Wow, you're definitely Team Klaus then, Sarah.
I was going to say.
When I was watching all the interactions between them, I actually felt bad for Klaus because he was trying so hard.
Oh,
and I kind of felt like...
striked out. Like,
yeah, I was kind of like, he's a little like out of touch with how to romance a woman. But at the same time, I couldn't help but think that maybe he had an ulterior motive. Because he showed a little bit of interest to Caroline before, but not that much. And so it's kind of like, suddenly his mom's back, and he needs to be a good boy. And then it's like, overly acting like he has his humanity back. Did anyone else think that?
Not really. No, I mean, I see what you mean, definitely. But I don't know. I think that Caroline's really gotten to him. You could be right.
I like them as a couple. I just, like, I can't help but think that Klaus has, like, another motive. Just, like, so he's having something going on behind the scenes. I would like to see them together more. We'll have to see what happens next episode. Tyler doesn't seem like he's going to be coming back anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have a point. I think he is trying to act his better self now that his mom is back. You know, I think that the fact that she came back and she, quote-unquote, forgave him really got to him, but it's going to be interesting to find out how he reacts when he finds out that she did not, in fact, forgive him. There was also an interesting quote that I wanted to bring up when Caroline told Klaus, "Your father didn't love you, so you assume that no one else will either." And then she told him that he has to learn how to understand people. I thought that was really telling, and probably will mean that he will work harder for her. It's kind of like a Spike situation in Buffy, isn't it? Like, he's going to work harder to impress his woman.
Just slip that Buffy reference in there.
Yeah, thanks. I try every show, you know.
I think Caroline definitely has his character better than anyone else. I mean, no one's really trying to understand Klaus and why he's doing the things he's doing, and she got it, like, spot on. He has daddy issues.
Yeah. Everybody has daddy issues in the show.
I think it's interesting. One of our commenters compared Klaus to a petulant 2-year-old, and I think all of his behavior with his mom and Caroline, really speaks to that. Like, you know, his mommy's back, and all of a sudden he's been a brat, and he's being a good little boy, and, like, he has this girl he has a crush on, and even though he's mean to the rest of the world, he's going to be nice to her. And so now every time I watch an episode after our commenter said that, all I can do is see him as, like, a little immature child.
Yeah, it's kind of true, actually. Finally, I guess the final sort of big romantic-ish development was between Rebecca and Matt. That's kind of unexpected, so I guess...
Well, I think it's probably nay now that she's sleeping with Damon.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was always kind of nay, because he doesn't really date vampires, does he? But
no.
It was still interesting to see her sort of develop a softer side for him. She could continue to pursue that, potentially.
She could, because, I mean, clearly Matt is one of those nice guys. That's why he gave her the coat and wrapped it around her. That was, like, the tipping point for her to not kill him.
That shows the men out there that that's That's what you do.
Chivalry will get you everywhere and not dead.
After I saw her so cold-hearted, you know, with telling her brother to kill Matt, I could never see them together. Like, you know, I didn't realize that she could be that cruel and be that cold.
Rebecca? She's very cruel.
I know, but I didn't think that she could kill Matt. I don't know. I had better hopes for her than that.
The interesting thing, though, was that she couldn't. You know, like, when it came down to it in the end, she really wasn't able to do it. And I know that Rebecca is cruel, but she has been, she has shown a lot of humanity throughout the episodes we've seen her in, you know? Like, her whole conversation with Elena before Elena staked her.
I guess that's why I thought she could never, like, ask her brother to kill Matt, because I really liked her, that conversation, and, you know, she, like, won me over with that show of her humanity.
I don't think Rebecca's, like, an evil person. I think she just has issues, too. This whole family has, like, emotional problems. And even, I think it was it Cole who said to Rebecca, like, really, Rebecca, like, that's all it took? He just had to be nice to you? So, I mean, it's not that hard to get Rebecca to win Rebecca over as a guy or even as, like, a friend, I think. Once you give her a little bit of attention and you're nice to her, she's not really a bad person, but she has impulse issues, I think.
Okay, so to talk about something slightly different, not so much romance, but only, you know, in my head, the sort of Elijah-Elena connection is still going strong in this episode, and I think Elijah, in general, is such an interesting character. You know, his mom tells him, I wish the others were more like you. You know, Elena almost gives away the big plot because she doesn't want Eli. You know, he seems like the best original, doesn't he? Like, he's kind of the only one of them that is good.
Wild. Yeah. Yes. I enjoy Elijah a lot, and I was so sad. I was really hoping he wasn't going to drink the champagne. Yeah. So I'm sure something will happen, because even his mother was having second thoughts when she was talking to Elijah. Finn says to her, don't go soft just because it's Elijah. You know, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I do enjoy the dynamic between Elijah and Elena. When they have their conversations, it's always very fun. So it's really good to see those interactions. And I wish Elena had felt more guilty and warned him about the champagne.
I think she did feel guilty.
But not guilty enough to save him.
Yeah, not guilty enough. I think if they were closer, if they had more interactions, she would feel more guilty. You could see it on her face. Like, she wasn't sure if she should tell him or not. She's very hesitant.
You could tell that she didn't want to kill Elijah, but she was, you know, she had to be kind of thinking, is it worth saving Elijah and not killing Klaus, Rebecca, and these two random brothers that we don't know much about, you know? I think she just decided that his death was worth it to get rid of Klaus.
Mm-hmm. Right, but do they all have to be connected in order, or only the ones connected die? That's
the question.
No, they
all had to be connected, otherwise the spell wouldn't work.
Okay.
Is the mom connected to that spell, too, or is it just the kids?
I think it's just the kids, but I imagine that she wouldn't mind having to die. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like, I don't know. I can't tell, though, with Esther, if she's genuine now or if she's still playing some kind of trick, because I believed her before. So I don't know what's going on with her.
Yeah, I don't know if I trust her yet. We're going to have to see what's going to happen, because it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
I mean, like, her reasonings make sense, and because she's a witch, she does want that balance in nature. She says that her kids are abomination. She needs to fix that wrong. She's obviously has a devious side to her, because she's willing to go behind all of their backs and lie to all of them. And really, the only people who know what's going on at this point are Elena and Finn.
Yeah, and isn't that interesting?
It's weird that he knows and he's okay with it.
I thought it was weird that she picked Finn over Elijah.
I don't think Elijah wants to die, and she knows that, whereas Finn said, I'm ready to die when I have to.
Yeah, and I think Elijah as well, like, he has a closer relationship to Klaus and Rebecca, for that matter. Like, Finn has been... I think Finn is the one who's been entrapped for 900 years. So he's sort of more removed from the rest of them, I think. He seemed interesting, though. And I think Cole is an interesting character as well. He's kind of like the new Damon.
he seems to be the most reckless out of all of them. Like, Klaus is dangerous, but Cole just doesn't seem to care, because Klaus is scared of his mom, and Cole isn't at all.
Yeah.
He purposely was trying to upset his mother.
Yeah, that's going to be, I think, some interesting dramas going to come out of that. Okay, finally, where do you guys think that this spell thing is going to go? I mean, clearly the spell isn't done yet. We have to remember this is only the first stage, so they aren't actually bound, as far as I understand it anyway, they aren't actually bound by the magic yet. So do you think it's actually going to go through and they're going to kill off all the originals at once, or is something going to happen?
I can't imagine that they're going to kill all of them at once. That's too, that would be too easy.
Yeah. I was like, something is going to go wrong. It always does. Always.
Yeah.
I think this is way too many characters for them to have in the show. You know, now we have, what, 5, 6 originals, and there's the whole cast from the last 2 seasons. I just don't think it can go on with that many people. It's too confusing. So I don't know if there's some way the spell can work out to where some of the originals are killed, but we get to keep Rebecca Klaus and Elijah.
Yay!
And, you know, I don't know how it's going to work out, but I don't think they'll all die, but I also don't think they'll all stick around.
No, yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. If Elena maybe looks to Bonnie for help and gets Bonnie to help alter the spell in some way or something, because that happens all the time with them, so that could happen and some of them could live.
To be honest with you, the only one I see surviving is Klaus. I want Elijah to die, but I feel like... No, that's not true. I want him to live. But I feel like he seems like someone whose death would be, you know, it seems like the route that the Vampire Diaries writers would go down, because his death would be emotional enough for the viewers, because they actually care about him, so they might choose to kill him off, and then probably Cole and Finn, unless they choose to develop, say they choose to develop Cole into the new bad, and Rebecca, I feel like she might die as well. Because she's so much like Caroline, like, even though she's not, like, physically, and she's a vampire, and I just don't know if there's room for both of them on the show. Sounds a bit shallow, but...
No, I know what you mean. It makes sense. You don't want to have too many characters that are alike.
Yeah. I mean, who do you guys think is going to die this season, if anyone?
I don't know. It's, well, with whoever's stabbing people, because they didn't resolve that in any way, so you never know, anyone could go. At this point, Alaric could go because his ring doesn't seem to be working as well. I know, I didn't say I liked it. I just said it's an option. Because that would eliminate every last adult in Elena's life if he goes, which would be very sad. But still, because his ring isn't working as well as it should be, so they've kind of made that area available. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. That would be my guess, though.
I do think another adult will die, but I don't think it'll be Alaric, or at least I'm hoping it won't be. But I could see them killing off Tyler's mom or Caroline's mom, or, you know, I think that less adults are going to be in Mystic Falls at the end of this. And I really think that they'll also be killing off at least some of the originals.
Definitely some of them. Probably Esther will die by the end of the season.
I just want to say that the gowns, the dresses were gorgeous. And I'm not like a huge dress kind of girl, but oh my god, they were beautiful.
Caroline's dress especially was amazing.
Yeah.
With the big poofy skirt and the like jeweled bodice, it was so pretty. Like peeking out over the fashion through the whole episode.
It really was amazing. And, you know, something I wanted to bring up is how come they always know those dances? Like, it's just a TV thing. It just annoys me.
I was thinking that, too, while I was watching it. I was like, did they all take classes? Like, it's supposed to be, like, an old-fashioned dance, and just magically everyone in the town knows it.
Well, Caroline actually gave justification for that. You know, she said, I'm Miss Mystic Falls.
That was a good line, by the way.
And so hers made sense, but Elena knowing these dances, I don't know. Maybe she and Damon practice behind the
scenes. Maybe.
Elena was in the Mystic Falls pageant. So maybe they had to do it for the pageant. Remember, they did have one at the pageant, or whatever it was called, for Miss Mystic Falls, because her and Damon danced, because Stefan wasn't there.
That is true. And the rest of them were compelled. There you go.
Exactly.
Well, okay. Laura, are you ready to take over for the Secret Circle discussion?
Sure am.
Good.
Okay, so this week's episode of The Secret Circle was called Valentine's Day, and I just loved it because it was just so opposite of the perfect Valentine's Day. There were no roses, there was no lovely dinner, there was no, well, there was kissing, but not, you know, that really incredibly prolonged romantic kissing as you might think. It was just, it was the Valentine's Day from hell. I loved it. It was just mayhem everywhere. So the basic premise was that Faye was having a all-girls sleepover, no boys allowed, that she initially invited Melissa to, and then Melissa turned around and invited Diana and Cassie to, which of course Faye wasn't incredibly happy about, but you could really see that Melissa really feels like she needs all the girls together. And I guess it makes sense because Melissa's really the one who's been sort of the most needy and the most hurting, and she's sort of, you know, relying back on her girlfriends. So they have the sleepover party where Cassie soon ends up feeling completely out of place at, and she goes off to join Adam, who invites her to come over. So Cassie leaves, and we discover via Jake, who's been having a conversation with him, the head of the witch hunters, that because Cassie has activated this medallion, she's basically ignited this magical beacon that sent out a notification to every dead witch in the area that, woohoo, the medallion's back, come and get it. So now she's being basically stalked by ghost witches, which is kind of interesting. And it ends up with Jake and Adam teaming up to rescue Cassie at this church where these ghost witches are going to try to get her in the medallion or possess her. We weren't really sure where that was exactly, what the end game of that was going to be, because obviously they were defeated before we got that far. And then the other side that we see is back at the party. We have Faye, Diane, and Melissa, where two of them are higher than high on that devil's spirit, and we got to see a whole other side of Diana the wild woman let loose. And then we had Melissa practically overdosing on it. And then the very last thing that we really realize is that Lee obviously is playing some sort of manipulation game, getting close to the girls and trying to take magic, perhaps for his girlfriend. That's a little unclear. We can talk about that. And then the very, very last thing we realize is John Blackwell is coming back. So it was a packed episode. It was another packed episode. I love this so much. Like, it just seems like the last three have been so much information coming at us. And I just love that it just keeps you on the edge of your seat. You don't just mentally check out. You're just going, oh my gosh, what are they going to do next? In any case, I figured to try to talk about this, probably the best way to do this is to break this down into what went on at the party versus what went on at the church. And then maybe we could talk a little bit about some of the changing looks of the cast and some of the romance afterwards. To kick it off, let's talk about the Valentine's Day party. I think probably the most fun thing to talk about with that is good girl Diana coming off that pedestal. Oh my gosh. I was like, and all the inhibitions were gone. So what did you guys think about sort of semi-wild child Diana?
I loved it. Oh my god. This was like the best sexy girl sleepover party. Like, any boy watching this show would love it. And I just thought it was so amazing to see this whole other side of Diana, which was, I wasn't really worried about Diana. Like, she was, it was a drug, but she was being kind of safe with it. She wasn't really using that much. Whereas Melissa was, like, way off the deep end, taking too much. My favorite part was when Diana was just kissing any boy that came to the door and accidentally kissed Lee.
That was so good. It was like the spell. It's like, we're going to conjure up the sexy pizza guy and I'm going to make out with him when he gets here. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Was like, oh my god, teen magic gone wrong.
Yeah, that's interesting. Did it work? Like, was it actually, could they actually do that, or was it just coincidence?
I think it was a coincidence. I mean,
yeah, obviously it was that was a coincidence that he came, but I mean, would they...
Yeah, like, did they make him look hotter than he actually was? I don't know. I have a hard time thinking that the spell could just conjure up a really hot guy. I think they just, or let's face it, witches throughout the ages, all of Chance Harbor would just look entirely too gorgeous. So I think it was, yeah, I'm going to say they didn't, maybe in their minds he looked really hot, but I don't think they actually changed his physical appearance or anything.
I'm so used to on shows like this magic being used to, you know, save the greater good and help people and whatever. I think it's so funny to see them doing things like changing the color of Diana's dress and conjuring up a hot delivery boy.
I know, yeah. It's like Sabrina and the Teenage Witch all over again.
Yeah, other shows, too, that have, like, witch mythology. Like, everybody knows I was a big Charmed fan. And that was, like, a big no-no in the Charmed universe, that you weren't allowed to use magic for personal gain, because if you did, it had, like, this sort of unexpected whammy that would come back and bite you in the butt. I wonder if maybe they try to be a little more altruistic here on the Secret Circle, that they're really not going to go that route, because they haven't said, like, there's a downside to doing it for yourself. So, I don't know.
I think they do it to show that these are really still kids, and they are kind of doing, like, they think the magic is fun still, so they do it for fun things.
Yeah, and also, I mean, they almost need to, because really, for a show about witches, they have any power. I mean, since they bound the circle, you know, I miss the days of the one episode that before they bound the circle, where they sort of had individual magic, because it's so restricted, and everything at the moment seems to be about Cassie setting everything on fire, and you know, that's kind of it. And it kind of, in this show, it's really hard to see what the benefits actually are to being able to do magic, because they don't actually get anything out of it.
Her own magic a couple episodes ago, what could she do? She could unlock her locker.
Yeah, yay.
And she could start a couple fires.
Yeah, it's like Harry Potter only being able to do, like, Alohomora and Incendio, and then leaving it at that, you know.
That's a good point. I can open stuff and I can burn stuff.
Yay! Yeah, but it is weird, and, you know, I almost wish that they'd done something a little bit different, like that they use the magic for something that actually works, because even when they tried to change the color of the dress, they only set it on fire, so, yeah.
Well, that's because Cassie's black magic takes over.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Cassie. To see them try to do, like, a real spell while they're high, because we still don't know if this drug actually gives you the power. I don't think it does at all, because, you know, like I said last episode, I think Faye would actually be using it more if it did that. They were still able to do magic when they did the Ouija board.
Right, and I'm not so sure that was their magic. I think that was more the ghosts of the dead witches reaching out through the medallion to make it.
That's true.
Work. That's what I think was going on there. But I like what you're saying about, like, the devil's spirit. One of the things that kept going through my head, is this really, really very, very physically addicting, or is it just more of, you could overdose easily if you took too much of it? Like, clearly, Faye and Diana are able to have it and then not feel like, oh my god, I need another hit right now. And I feel like Melissa wasn't potentially addicted to it. It's just that she's still in so much pain, I think, really, that she was choosing to take it, not that she was addicted to it. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I agree. Definitely agree.
It definitely took their inhibitions down, is what I feel like. You know, when you get drunk, or if you're high on something, I think a lot of the times it's not so much that you totally would do something you wouldn't do. It's just that it sort of takes that, oh, don't do that, pause button out of your brain. And I think that's what definitely happened with the devil's spirit, is that it showed that Diana wasn't per se always the perfect girl, the goody-goody. It's that she does have another side to her. It's just that it's so closed in most of the time. I think that's kind of what a lot of that drug was doing. What do you guys feel about that?
I definitely think so. I just love Diana. I just have to say, she's, like, really quickly becoming my favorite character.
I loved her text to Cassie. And Cassie's there going, WTF? Like the whole, I think that was one of my other favorite things of that party, is that Cassie just keeps looking at them like, what have you done with Diana and Faye? I mean, that was just, you know, that you're like,
so
I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, it was just, it's such a great way of, I don't want to say it's a great way to that they're doing this, but that we just see a different side of the characters. And, you know, as I'm sure you're going to talk about, the whole relationship between the three of them. I mean, the storyline sort of let us explore all these things, and it was really great, I think.
Yeah, actually, that's a great point that you bring up right now, Selena. Why don't we get into it? What do you guys think about the dynamic now, the girls and their relationship and the new information that we learned?
I kind of felt like Faye is a little bit more okay with Diana being closer to Melissa, because she feels like they need to help Melissa right now, because clearly Melissa's spiraling out of control. I think we also saw in this episode that Cassie is pulling away from the girls. Her and Adam are kind of doing this their own thing right now. previously it was kind of Cassie and Jake, and now she switched it to Adam. But she just couldn't, like, hang out with them. She just couldn't have fun with them. She's so wrapped up in everything else. It's, well, it was a little bit sad to see, really.
Yeah, and I have to say, I mean, as much as Cassie is a great character, I think my favorite part of the show right now is the drama going on with the three other girls. You know, it's the sort of the exploration of their friendship and how it's shifted and the dynamic between... This gives Melissa a way of connecting with the other characters that she's really been missing. I think them making her... She is the one that both Faye and Diana want as their best friend. I mean, that kind of gives her a whole new importance, you know, because for teenagers, that is the way that you interact with each other. It is who is their best friend now, and who is, you know, who do my best friend see as their best friend, and how do I interact with this person, you know, all that drama, and they really do it so well.
I think that brings up a great point too, is that it, you know, so much of teenage life, you know, if you look at TV, a lot of the times, you almost feel like every single person on a show is paired off with as a romantic couple. And that's so just not what high school is. That's just so not high school. I mean, there are so many people that aren't paired off with people. And I love that this show does not magically put everybody together in a couple, and that there's actually more girls on it than there are guys. I mean, how unusual is that? That it's usually either dead even, or sometimes it's even a little more guy heavy. So I really think that's pretty cool for the CW to have chosen to go down this route of making it very female centric, but not per se female romance centric. I think that's a really bold move for them to do, and I think people like it. So people should embrace that.
But I also think the interactions between the girls are all very realistic. You know, most shows will either have the girls all best friends and not a lot of drama, or everyone will be, like, frenemies and constantly fighting. And I think the way they have it with, like, different friendships forming and going in and out, sometimes getting along, sometimes not, you know, I think it's very realistic to actual high school life.
How do you guys feel about how Diana and Faye reacted to Melissa overdosing? They kind of... just, like, rushed off into the bathroom, didn't they?
Yeah, with the implication being that they, you know, obviously, I don't know if they, you know, made her throw up or whatever they did to her, you know, is there some magic sobriety spell that we don't know about? I don't know. But I was glad that they just instantaneously said, okay, whoa, you know, problem, danger, let's, you know, put all this fighting aside. We have a bigger issue to worry about here. And then they put pettiness aside because there was obviously... a greater problem going on.
Yeah, and I think in a way it's setting up, I mean, this is just a theory, but I think it's setting up a split in the circle. I think at one point Cassie's magic is going to form a rift between the characters, and I think they're sort of setting up this alliance between Faye, Diana, and Melissa that might go against Cassie, Jake, and Adam, and they might be on opposite sides. That would definitely be interesting to see.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be coming up soon, because we can see this, like, shift in power in the group where Diana's not really the leader anymore, and kind of everything's all about Cassie and what Cassie's ideas are, what they should do. In the last episode, we saw Cassie make the decision of activating the medallion, and she let everyone vote on it, but, I mean, really, Cassie, you know.
Exactly.
We're seeing Cassie call the shots now, but I think we're going to come to a point where the girls say, just get tired of her, which is, I think, what we're really seeing. They're calling her, like, the boyfriend stealer this episode.
It's an interesting dynamic. Why don't we move over, since we're talking about Cassie, why don't we move on to talking about the church scene and, you know, a little bit about what went into that? First of all, I have to say, I had to laugh when I heard that, you know, Isaac saying to Jake that, oh, you know, John Backwell killed a bunch of these witches at this church that's, you know, only like a quarter mile from here. It's out in the woods. I was picturing this, like, little country church. Okay, there's a big, scary, like, humongous cathedral. I mean, I'm like, oh my god, you could put the entire population of Chance Harbor in the next two towns over in that church. I thought, really? Okay, it was scary to have her, you know, run up to that big gothic structure, but really, who builds a gigantic cathedral in the middle of the woods and then abandons it? So I thought that was a little funny on that level. However, the events inside were really pretty good. What did you guys think about Thomas Dekker playing possessed Adam? That was a huge high point for me. What did you think about the way that was chosen?
That was so creepy. He did such a good job playing the possessed, like, character. I was totally convinced that he was possessed, and it was super creepy, and it was perfect how he was not threatening Cassie, but threatening himself. I just thought the whole scene was perfect. It was amazing.
That was awesome. I loved that. That I thought, wow, that's really genius. I also liked that it was a different kind of possession, because we also saw Nick and Melissa possessed, you know, when it was a demon versus this was a ghost witch taking over somebody's body. It was a different kind of possession, and I love that it was still really creepy, but it wasn't the same thing as the last time. I thought that was pretty cool.
He's so emo, though.
I know.
Like, it's just the whole thing of him just being there with the knife, and I was just like, oh, no.
And the guy liner. The guy liner, again, I mean, there were some episodes where it gets better. Like, there were a couple close-ups this time out where I went, oh, thank God, like, the makeup department has toned it down. But there's other episodes that I'm going, maybe it's him or maybe it's Maybelline. Like, can we just tone down the guy liner, please? It was funny. One of our listeners, Gary65, came in, and he had a really great comment. He said that his favorite moment of the episode was Adam's Valentine's Day possession, and he gave big kudos to Thomas Dekker for his superb acting. And then he said, note makeup department, you have 3 episodes to turn down the guy liner before I break into the set. Tie your hands together. The cast is hot enough already. Chill. I agree with him. It's like, we've got to tone down the emo guy liner, guys. Really, seriously. You know.
Sorry, shipping wise though, it was a really good moment because it sort of forced Cassie not to choose between Adam and Jake, but to choose between Adam and magic and power.
Yeah, that's good that she, you know, I love that she's going to Jake. I have no choice. And I think for a lot of people, they thought, I have no choice. I love Adam. I'm going to hand that over. And not that I have no choice meant I'm going to destroy this medallion. I thought that was incredibly courageous for her character to do that.
I was totally shocked that they got rid of the medallion that quickly. I thought it was going to be sticking around for a long time. So I couldn't believe that she... Okay, first of all, how did she crush it? She was really strong.
I know, just in her bare hand. I mean, I thought, wow, that medallion, I guess, was a lot more fragile than I thought. I was shocked that it was in her bare hand. I mean, another one of our listeners came in and said, Cassie, go Cassie, crushing the medallion in her bare hand. Go girl. What a role model. Crushing bling to save her man since 2012. I laughed out loud when I heard that. But yeah, I mean, I was surprised that it broke that easily.
I didn't really see it like her crushing it in her bare hand. I kind of felt like there was some power behind it, like magical power in her crushing it. I don't know if I just totally saw that different from everyone, but...
No, I think that's pretty reasonable because, I mean, obviously she's been, you know, the medallion fell to the floor in the boat and she's been wearing it around her neck and it went on the counter. I mean, if it was really very fragile, it just would have been in a lot rougher shape, I think, than it was. So I think you definitely have a solid point there, Sarah.
How do you guys feel about what's going to happen when John Blackwell gets back and he realizes his medallion is destroyed?
Ooh. Yeah, and that it's like imprinted on his hand or something. Did you say that sort of final shot, like there was an imprint of the medallion? It was like branded into his hand, so that's going to be interesting.
Maybe he has the power of the medallion in himself. Maybe that was part of it being connected to the house, his house.
Right, and it's still in the roof of the basement, or the ceiling of the basement, I should say.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's gone for good, but I think its power is lingering, or some power linked to that symbol is going to be around still.
Well, what I thought the imprint was, I thought it was a burn mark because he used it in the fire on the boat.
I would agree. I think you're right. But I wonder if when it did that burning, if it did transfer some power in the process of the burning, maybe?
I feel like it must have, because otherwise, wouldn't he have gone back for the medallion? It wasn't that hard to find it. Cassie found it, like, pretty quickly.
Right. I also like that connection between Cassie and Adam. I thought, well, first of all, every Chatham shipper out there, like, punched the air when that happened. I felt like it was one of the best connections, truly, on both their sides. Like, I felt like we've been seeing a little more emotion out of Adam, but I felt like this was the first time we had an equal response out of Cassie, and I felt like Jake was really seeing that for the first time. I felt like Jake before felt like, oh, I have more of a fighting shot because she's not 100% convinced yet. And there, I think you really saw that she's totally into being with him.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like in the pilot episode, we saw this great connection between the two of them, and we really didn't get to see that same connection until this episode. We saw, like, bits and pieces of them interacting, but from this episode, you could really tell that maybe they really are meant to be together.
Aww.
You're so sweet. Now, on the other side, I was wondering, the witches took over Adam. Jake doesn't get affected at all. I mean, and he sort of, I guess because of his previous experience, he knows what happens. Jake's kind of like the Hermione of Harry Potter in that he has just enough experience beyond everybody else to sort of know what may happen.
That's a random connection.
Sort of random connection. Well, just like, I just think about like how J.K. Rowling had said at one point that, you know, if her characters needed to know something, she could always have it be Hermione because Hermione read it in a book and she could say, oh, I know that's because. And I feel like Jake has a little bit of that, not that, you know, you can equate this with Harry Potter. They're two different series, but it's sort of that thing of if the characters in the secret circle need to know a little bit beyond what they know, Jake can be the one to tell them because he's had more experience than they did. So I felt like Jake kind of knew the possibilities of what would happen in that scenario because of his previous experience with the witch hunters. But I was curious why, you know, even if you know something, it doesn't mean you still can't be the victim of it. I was surprised that they didn't attempt to go for both of them, or that Jake, you know, when he dives in the middle, doesn't suddenly get, you know, affected. What did you guys think about that?
Well, it's probably because of the connection between Adam and Cassie. Maybe if, I wouldn't say that Cassie wouldn't care that if Jake got possessed, but maybe she wouldn't care enough to crush the medallion or hand over the medallion. Whereas obviously Adam was freaking out when he got in the church, so they probably surmised that something was going on between those two, and they were more important to each other than Jake, who was kind of in the background and didn't want to get close to the ghosts.
That's a good point. Like, they could figure out what the weak link was, and they went at, like, the weak link. Yeah, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. We touched on a little bit, but just sort of to wrap up on two things that we see coming is the romance area. We have definitely, there's a whole bunch going on with that. I mean, I think we've kind of solidified that Chatham is the ship that is sailing right now. But I still love the Jake-Faye relationship, known as Faye, which I still can't figure out who's using who and who's using who more, and that each of them is kind of happy with each other, but other people. What do we think about just Faye? I don't know where to go with it.
I think that Faye probably likes Jake more than Jake likes Faye, only because when, you know, she sort of started getting interested in what's-his-face, but then once she began her thing with Jake, she's over him now. What is his name?
Lee.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and she wasn't really upset either when Diana kissed Lee, so I think we can clearly tell that Faye is totally over Lee. But I agree, Selena, I think Faye likes Jake more than she's letting on, and she's just trying to pretend that she's using him. I mean, I think part of her is using him to kind of have more power in the circle, because he's kind of, there's only two guys, but he's the more powerful of the two guys, and he knows more than the rest of the people in the circle. So I think she is using him a little bit, but you can't deny that she does have feelings for him.
She was definitely using both him and Lee, but I think there's a big difference in the way she was using him. Like, I agree. She definitely, I think, has feelings for Jake.
Yeah, like, I feel like Lee could walk out of the picture tomorrow and she'd be like, all right, whatever. Versus, I think she would be genuinely upset if Jake, you know, suddenly either A, takes up with another girl in the circle, like, not per se Cassie, like, if Jake suddenly connected over to Melissa or something, you know, or took off again, I think she would be genuinely upset versus I think Lee could disappear tomorrow and she wouldn't really care that much, other than missing his, you know, magical supply shop.
Yeah.
Did anyone else think it was weird that Lee asked Stay out to dinner, right? And then we find out that he's actually using her. We're assuming that he's using her for her power to get his girlfriend back.
Yeah, that's cool. And I'm curious how much of that is going to work and what this girlfriend is like. That could be, you know, we're all like very psyched. I mean, I know I'm really looking forward to seeing John Blackwell coming back next episode, which I don't think is a spoiler given the, you know, the preview that ran at the end of the episode. But obviously this girl is the love of Lee's life and she was a witch. So what was she like? And I'm just wondering, could this maybe be the other Blackwell child? Anybody?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, because mainly because she has the same hair as Kathy. But I still want it to be someone we know. Like, I want it to be Diana or Faye or even Melissa. But when I saw this girl in the bed, that's my immediate thought was, oh, there we go. She's Kathy's half-sister.
She's the other Blackwell child.
That would as
or
well,
maybe it's Jake.
Well, yeah, maybe. Because also that would give Lee some relevance. You know, why is he here? What is he doing here?
I'm really, really curious where this one goes. I definitely want to hear more about this. Okay. Only thing that I'm really looking forward to next week, because we didn't really see any of them this week, was the adults. We still have Cassie's grandmother that's MIA, off with the healers. We didn't see Dawn or Charles. I know. I'm like, can we please bring Jane back? Can we just... I don't know. Get a phone call from Jane. That would be nice.
Why is no one questioning it? That's what I don't understand, because last episode, Cassie was like, oh, my grandmother should have been back by now, and then nothing else.
Right. Yeah. Jane permanently at the healers. You know, I'm really wondering, and especially with her father coming back next episode, I mean, I suppose it does make for an interesting dynamic if she has to meet her father without the support of her grandmother. But at the same time, grandma can only go missing so long. You know, or does that mean dad moves in? That could be fun.
Oh my, yeah. I think Jane being MIA right now is bad news bears for Cassie.
We have a bit of feedback on both the Vampire Diaries and the Secret Circle this week. So, Jen, do you want to start reading the first comment?
Sure. Is that the
Rachel Gay? Yeah.
Okay. If Elena and Matt get back together, I wouldn't be upset about it. I mean, I love Elena Damon and Elena Stefan, but I think she needs some normal in her life. She is so into the whole supernatural world when she shouldn't be. I mean, even she said she doesn't want to be a vampire, so why would she waste her time dating them? Why not try and find a human? Also, I really hope we get to see a flashback of the original doppelganger. I think Nina can for sure pull off three different characters. As for who is killing everyone, I think it's either someone we haven't seen before or it's someone who is right in front of us. So I think she has some interesting points there. And Elena, it's just so... We're all caught up in the Elena Stefan, Elena Damon thing. So it would be an interesting twist to have an Elena Matt back together kind of thing. That would definitely, I think, frustrate a lot of the inhabitants of Mystic Falls, and it would be interesting to see where that went, but I don't know if Matt would be willing to now still get back with Elena.
I was just gonna say, I can't even imagine them together, because Elena is such a part of the supernatural world in the town. I can't see her having a normal life, and I can't see her really settling down with a normal person. It's just like impossible for me to imagine at this point. And does Matt really want to get involved with her? She is considered a supernatural, but she's not a vampire. She's not a werewolf. She's not a hybrid. So she's not anything really that dangerous, but I don't see it happening.
Yeah, I think it's... I mean, they're almost setting it up as a bit of a red herring or as a... Like, showing us what Elena's alternative is. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this is a life she could have had. And, you know, Zach Rorick has... Rorick? I don't know how he's supposed to say his name. Mm-hmm. But he's said in interviews that he doesn't believe that they'll get back together. Like, he thinks maybe eventually down the line, him and Elena could have a chance. But right now, she's way too caught up in the drama of the vampires, which I think is true.
And also, I don't see her... Right now, with the threat of Klaus still around, I don't see her taking the chance of falling in love with actual human and reproducing. I don't think she would want to pass that on to her daughter.
Yeah, I think the doppelganger line is really going to end with Elena.
I do think it would be cool to see the original doppelganger, though.
Yes.
Oh, to have that storyline told. I think that would be fantastic. And I agree. I think if Nina were to play that role, that she would be a really, it would be a really cool third character for her to play.
Mm-hmm. I think that when we find out more about her, it's going to come from Esther. She's going to have more of the background knowledge on it because she's the one who did the spell with her, with Tatia. Exactly. Right? That's her name?
So the next comment, Sarah, do you want to read that out from Emily Z?
Emily Z has a theory on who's killing council members. And she writes, my crackpot theory about this is that Jeremy is compelled by someone who we don't know yet to kill council members. He left after Damon compelled him, and I don't know if they gave him the vervain back. Also, we know that Stephen R. McQueen is still in Atlanta, which means he is still filming. I don't think he ever made it to Denver. Total crackpot theory, but it is the Vampire Diaries.
Dun, dun, dun.
I actually think that's a really good theory, because yeah, he would know where all of the weapons were, and he's clearly very easily compelled. So, and he would be able to know his way around town. And I'm not sure how many people know that he left town, so maybe some people wouldn't really question seeing him.
I don't know, though. It's definitely a good theory, but I'm not sure. I mean, it would definitely be a great way of sort of reintroducing him, but if Damon compelled him to leave town, I don't know how he would be able to stay.
Maybe he was already compelled before Damon compelled him.
Maybe.
And maybe you can't compel on top of a compel.
You can't co-compel someone?
Multiple compelling, exponential compelling.
God is like math. So we've got some secret circle comments now. Do you want to, Laura?
Sure. First one is Neri L., I hope I'm saying that the right way, who wrote in to clear up a point about Lucy from last week's episode, and she says that Lucy was always working with the witch hunters. Lucy told Dawn right before she stabbed her that she always knew what side she was on. That's why she didn't want to warn John about the witch hunters. She was a reason that they were able to show up without the circle knowing. So, yep, we agree. Sometimes in the middle of the live podcast, your brain kind of goes on off some of the time. And, yeah, you're absolutely right. Definitely big in clearing that one up. Absolutely. Does anybody want to pick up what Melissa West had to say about the Secret Circle this week, or do you want me to talk about it? Okay, I'm going to do it. Melissa West wrote in, and ooh, this is going to be controversial, that the Secret Circle was better last week than the Vampire Diaries was. She says, amazing episode, possessed Adam creepy. Do you think the power of the medallion is gone now? If not, where is it now? Also, I loved how Cassie destroyed the medallion to save Adam from the ghost witches possessing him. What do you guys think? Do we think that the power of the medallion is absolutely gone, or do we think there are some, you know, residual powers kicking around from that?
I think we'll definitely see some residual powers going on, whether it's from the burn on Dad Blackwell's hand, or if somehow the remains of the medallion can be used. I think that the power is not gone, just the physical object is.
I was just going to say, I thought the Vampire Diaries was better this week.
I agree.
I mean, I loved the Secret Circle episode, but the Vampire Diaries, it was all the pretty dresses. They just...
I think that they were two very different episodes. It's kind of hard to compare them, because the Vampire Diaries was more of a background on what was going on. We got more details and more emotional, whereas Secret Circle was all action-packed. So maybe on the surface, the Secret Diaries was more interesting or more shocking. We did get a bunch of information that was important on the Vampire Diaries, so I think it's kind of hard to compare them. They're two separate shows. I thought they were both amazing, so.
And I'm sure we'll bring the pretty, too. I mean, right now, they wear a lot of plaid and stuff, which I like, because it's really realistic. But, I mean, prom's got to happen sooner or later, right? We'll bring the pretty at prom time. It will happen. One of our listeners, too, Gary65, who always makes these really great in-depth comments. I love reading Gary's comments. He was talking also about the medallion and how it steals which is power, and he had this really interesting thought. He said, what if it was the medallion that sealed away the powers of the previous circle? I know Cassie's dad dropped it in the ship, but what if one of the elders found it and used it to seal away their powers, and believing John Blackwell dead, decided to use the place he dropped it as a hiding place for it? After what happened to the hunters there, and energy released from the violent deaths of six witches, we learn that Gray's Faye's grandfather died, and witches released their own energy that continues to exist after their death. If the witch isn't killed properly, it would be the perfect hiding place. No one, witch, human, or hunter would ever dare set foot there, so no one would ever find it. And then he follows it up with saying, also, better yet, maybe Blackwell used the medallion to suck away the powers of his fellow circle members so he could fight off the witch hunters as we saw and witnessed. And he says, in either of these theories, could you imagine what Dawn, Charles, and Elder anyone would do if they saw Cassie with it? Maybe that's why, spoiler alert, John wants the medallion back, and he's coming back for it next episode. So, some really in-depth theories there. I really like the idea that maybe he used the medallion to suck powers and then to use those newly acquired powers to defeat the circle, or that maybe the elders bound something on it. It could be interesting, because we still don't know how the elders stripped them of their powers. So that's a really good question.
I kind of assume that when the medallion took a witch's power, it also killed them, because the witches in the church were ghosts. And why would John Blackwell just randomly kill them? He killed them because he took their power. And when the medallion was taking the power from the circle of the kids, they were getting like weak. It was not only draining their magic power, it was draining them physically. But I guess most of the parent circle is dead. So
the one thing I really do want to say is just John Will, that's good. John Blackwell back in town. That has got to create chaos at best between the older generation and the parents' generation, and then obviously, I mean, all three generations. I mean, this has got to be huge, and I really am dying to see how each one of those generations reacts to the fact that A, John Blackwell isn't dead, and B, he's back in town. So I feel like I should start singing like Mac the Knife or something now, but yeah.
I can't wait to see how Ethan reacts and how Don reacts.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Dawn, mm-hmm. because she clearly had something for him, and so I think it'll be a really interesting dynamic between Dawn and Charles and Blackwell.
Right, and Ethan, if there was some sort of double cross or something, presumably the only one who would have known it was, I guess, John Blackwell. So that might be interesting. He may be the only one of a secret that Ethan knew, so that could be really pretty cool.
Yeah, because, yeah, Ethan, yeah, he's still very suspicious.
I guess that's about everything for this week. Vampire Diaries episode will be entitled All My Children.
I was to say, and I actually do know, the Secret Circle episode title is da-da-da-da, Return.
Return. It's always just one word. It makes it easier for our show titles here. But yeah, so those should be very, very interesting. And of course, you can go on hyperbole.com and read all about them and watch the promos and the sneak peeks and read the synopses and what, you know, see the pictures and all the other ways you can spoil yourself. And of course, check back here next week for our discussion of the two episodes. And finally, if you want to send us any feedback about this episode or leave your comments for our listener feedback section next week, you can email us at secretdiaries. No, that's a lie. No, it's true. Secret Diaries. I always get so confused. secretdiaries@hyperbole.com. You can tweet us at secretdiariestv. Secret Diaries TV, and you can go on hyperbole.com. That's hyperbole.com. under the podcast section. So thank you very much for listening. I am Selena.
I'm Laura.
I'm Jen.
I'm Sonia.
And I'm Sarah.
Hey, well done, everybody. We said our names. Yay.
I think we have like a kind of an order down.
Yeah, we kind of do. This is nice. Okay. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.